Akshay, did you always knew what you wanted to do when you passed out from MBA?
I was all over the place. Saurabh, what about you?
Yaar, meko to tab bhi idea nahi tha, aaj bhi idea nahi hai.
Confused about your career choices? Wondering what steps to take next? In this podcast called Beyond Campus, Saurabh Garg, founder of C4E, and Akshay Dutt, founder of Unnati, are on a mission to crack open the career success code for the youth. Wo bachpan mein kehte the na, tum jo chahe ban sakte ho. So, let's turn the dream into reality.
Hi guys, my name is Arjun Vaidya and I'm the CEO at Dr. Vaidya's.
If you had to choose between a glamorous corporate job or joining in your family business, what would you do? Difficult decision, isn't it? Well, Arjun did not think twice before giving it all up to take forward his family's legacy of 150 years of Ayurveda. Arjun Vaidya is the CEO of Dr. Vaidya's, an Ayurvedic company bringing traditional Ayurveda in a brand new avatar to the world. Listen to him talking about his interesting journey with Ayurveda and e-commerce.
So tell me about you growing up in Mumbai, and you know, what kind of aspirations did you have as a kid? That did you think that I'm going to grow up and become a businessman, since you have that in your blood, or what was it in your mind?
No, so Akshay, actually, I always wanted to be a cricketer. So I grew up in a house with Ayurveda, with somewhat, like my dad, I would say, was some kind of an entrepreneur. My dad was an entrepreneur. I also grew up with juvenile bronchitis. So I started suffering from asthma, really serious asthma, actually, at the age of 2. And so I was on nebulizers, pumps, steroids, inhalers, all of that stuff. Basically, had a very different childhood from most other kids, right? So I wanted to be a cricketer. I started going for cricket coaching at age 5. And 2 years in, my dada sort of just pulled me out of cricket coaching because there was too much dust on the cricket field. I used to play at Hindustana in Bombay. And there was just too much dust. And I couldn't take it because of my asthma. So he pulled me out of cricket, which was really sad for me, right? I was like, everyone else is playing cricket. And I'm the kid playing golf and squash at age 7. Golf is not a sport that a 7-year-old kid can play unless you're a prodigy like Tiger Woods. Literally, I would go to the golf course and just be hitting the ground every single day. I mean, I'd hit 1 in 10, 1 in 15 shots, right? My dada was a golfer. Like, he was a very big golfer. So I'd go with him and he'd be playing his rounds and he'd come and just check me hitting for a little bit. Squash is like it's an individual sport, right? And that was a big regret for me. I was always a team sports guy. I really wanted to play team sports, but I couldn't, right? And I didn't have ice cream till I was 12. I didn't have a colored beverage like a Coca-Cola or a Fanta, any of that, until I was 12 years old because of my asthma. So I grew up with a very different childhood. But Ayurveda actually helped me get rid of asthma completely, right? So 12 to 14 years of treatment by my grandfather, eventually by age 14, 15, I was completely cured. I still have allergic asthma, so I still have dust allergies, but they've gotten much, much better. Now it's allowed me to run half marathons, to play whatever sports I want. I play cricket now. I was a captain of my school cricket team when I was 16 years old, which is a big deal for me, right? And so, yeah, that was my personal journey with Ayurveda. And that made me grow up a believer in the science. More than just family legacy, this is part of my heritage, all of those kind of... I grew up a believer in the science because of my personal experience with Ayurveda. Obviously, after I spent so much time with my dada, he sort of looked at me as the grandkid who would take the legacy forward. I was the one who sort of transcribed our family formulations from the scriptures to the computer. Like, I would sit on weekends with dada and he would read out the formulations that I put on an Excel sheet, etc., all of that. Informally, at some point, I made a promise to him as well that I would take forward the legacy.
So Arjun, tell me about your grandfather. And I believe he's instrumental in what you have built today.
So Akshay, I think we'll start a little bit before my grandfather as well. So Vaidya, my last name, means Ayurvedic doctor. In our family, we have 6 generations of Ayurvedic history. So the real journey of Dr. Vaidya would start with my great-grandfather, actually. He was an Ayurvedic doctor in Gujarat. And in 1923, he moved to Mumbai. He came to the big city to sort of practice his trade and take forward his family legacy, but in a sort of larger construct. So he came to the city. Obviously, at that time, allopathy ruled the roost. And so he was trying to sort of tell people and engage with people about Ayurveda, but people weren't willing to listen. And then, you know, in all of those stories where the small city guy comes to the big city. There was that one moment, right? And that moment where he was about to give up. He didn't have any money left. He was going to go back to Gujarat. And then there's that Hail Mary type of situation, right? And then there was a lady in the area he was living in Masjid Bandar, who was very ill. And most doctors in that area had given up on her. And so he said, look, I have nothing to lose. I know my medicine will work. Let me give it a shot. And so for 4 days, he painstakingly healed her with his Ayurvedic medicine and didn't leave her side till eventually she was okay. And the lady was an influential lady in that area. And because of what he had done for her, she gave him an old office of hers and said, I want you to start your Ayurvedic clinic here. And from 1923 to 2008, that was where my family clinic was. So my dada graduated from medical school in 1957, as was customary at that time. He joined his father in 71. His father retired. And then he took on his father's legacy and practice, and his father retired. In the 80s and 90s, my dada became probably Bombay's, if not India's, most successful Ayurvedic doctor. So in that clinic in Masjid Bandar, 350 patients a day would walk in. 12,000 patients a month would write to him via post, which was the old-time e-commerce, right? And so they would write to him about their issues, their ailments, etc., all of that. And the basis that he would ship them a prescription and medication, right? And what's really cool is we still do that today. So basically, my dada believed and my great-grandfather believed that we should not be charging anyone for a consultation. So consultation at Dr. Vaidya's from 1923 was always free. And you'd only charge for the medicine. And the medicine that they would give to people or prescribe to people were our secret family formulations passed down from generation to generation. So that was where the legacy came from. My dada was a doctor and he ran one clinic. My father wanted to sort of take forward the Ayurvedic legacy in a branded context, like in a branded construct. That's what his idea was. You know, what my dada was doing through a clinic, can we make that reach hundreds of thousands of consumers? And consumer brands were being built in the 80s and 90s in India. My dada said, look, why do I need to spend on marketing? 350 patients a day walk into this place with no marketing. So I don't know why I need to spend money to market my products. So after a year, my dada and my dad sort of went their own ways. My dad was always someone who wanted to create a brand. For 35 years, he's run his jewelry brand, which is his legacy. He runs a luxury jewelry brand called Rose. But there was always thought in the family, right, that Ayurveda is our legacy, Vaidya is in our last name.
So you said that you've always been selling your own formulation. So was this like a... You know, that at your home, there would be maybe the ladies of the house getting together and forming these medications? Or was it in a factory where it was mass produced? Or was it sourced through specific vendors in the for the clinic I'm talking about? Obviously, now I'm sure it'll be different.
Yeah, so actually, that's a really good question. Actually, it draws me back to something which happened like 60 days ago, right? So basically, when we had no manpower at our warehouse, there were only six of us going, four of whom are from my home, to pack the orders, right? And so we'd bring back all these courier bags and labels. So we'd do the labeling and sticking at home. While we couldn't pack the medicines at home, every single person was doing it. My parents were doing it. All the staff at home were doing it. My dadi was also doing it, right? She's 80 plus now. And when she was doing it, she was like, this reminds me of the old days. And I was like, you know, what were the old days? What were those old days? So she was like, in the 60s and 70s, we used to actually make the medicines in the clinic. We used to pack the courier parcels ourselves. We used to go to the post office and give it. By the 80s, my dada's practice grew too large to be able to hand make it, ladies of the house, etc., all of that. So he built a factory in Mumbai, and then in 97, he moved that factory to Silvassa, 15,000 square foot facility. And I actually still use that facility in Silvassa. But it was really nice for my dadi, because my dada's not around anymore. He's passed away. But it was really nice for her to still be a part of that legacy and that experience and still relive her memories of what she used to do, label those courier bags for us.
So till 2008, your grandfather was running that clinic. Then what happened then?
So in 2008, actually, my dada moved from Masjid Bandar to Tardeo. And so from 2008 to 2013, he ran his clinic out of this space in Tardeo. And then he passed in 2013, right? And he practiced till a month before he passed away. So today, that clinic in Tardeo, which he operated out of his last clinic, we still run his clinic there. And we have established our offices on the same floor as that clinic. And although the business is largely online today, that clinic still runs as an offline clinic and a legacy to my great-grandfather and grandfather.
So who ran it after he passed away? Because your father had left that line of work. So what happened then?
So there was a 3-year period, basically 2013 to 2016. We actually thought we'd shut it down because I just moved back to India after doing my undergrad in the US.
So first, tell, why did you decide to study abroad? What was in your mind when you were in like the 10 to 12?
I don't know why I decided to study abroad. I think I always just wanted to. My grandfather also really, really wanted me to study abroad. So did my parents. So I moved from an ICSE school to an IB school. I went to Dhirubhai Ambani International School and did my IB there in 11 and 12 with the objective that I wanted to go abroad. I wasn't as sure as the other kids that, you know, I'm exactly sure what I want to do. And so I chose to go to the US instead of the UK and do a liberal arts education. So I went to Brown when I was 17 and a half years old in Rhode Island in Providence. And, you know, before I went, my dada said, I will pay for your education if you promise me that you'll study biotechnology or biochemistry and you'll take forward my legacy. So at that time, I was like, yeah, sure, you know, I'll do it because I was a science kid. I did bio and chem high level in my IB. Very cool part of the liberal arts education, which many people won't know, at least which was there at Brown, was in the first week or 2 weeks of every semester, we were given the opportunity to do something called shopping of classes. And so for the first 2 weeks at Brown, it was called shopping period, where you could shop classes, which literally meant you go to a class, you check out what the prof is saying, and 15 minutes later, no disrespect to the prof, you can get up and walk out of the class if you don't like what you heard and go to another class. So we'd have like this list of like 10 classes and we'd shop those classes and then eventually decide what we wanted to take, which I thought is really cool. Like, I mean, I thought it was amazing concept. And so with all that shopping, with all those options, eventually in the first year, I didn't take any bio or chemistry or science classes.
Is this like a US specific thing or in general, a liberal arts education means that it includes everything? Like,
so I think liberal arts is largely a US concept. We've got a few institutions across the world who do it, but largely it's a US concept. But yeah, the sciences are included. So you could graduate a degree in biotechnology, biochemistry, etc. through Brown as well. And so really for me, I had those options and opportunities and history, politics, international relations, economics, sociology, anthropology. Those are the things that interested me and entrepreneurship, obviously. And so those are the classes I took in my first year. So my dada after the first year was like, I don't see any science on this transcript. Your grades may be great, but I'm not going to pay for this.
How did the whole experience in US change you as a person?
I think my experience in the US actually crafted the way I think about what I do today a lot, right? So I was in the Northeast. I saw a huge move toward natural organic products, went to the Whole Foods of the world, saw all these cool natural brands, consumers wanting to pay more for organic products. And I also saw something really cool with yoga. You know, I saw yoga being completely repackaged with yoga mats, yoga gyms, yoga pants, yoga apparel. I had a Dutch friend of mine who was teaching me yoga at Brown. And I thought, that is crazy. It's cool. But also, what are we doing as Indians? You know, this is our heritage. And why didn't we take it to the world? Why is someone repackaging and giving it back to us? And that got me thinking that, look, yoga has been done. It's been repackaged already. Why can't we be the people to do this with Ayurveda? That was the initial thought process behind what we do at Dr. Vaidya's. And I, even in my final year, wrote a case study for one of my entrepreneurship classes. I wrote a business plan for an early format of Dr. Vaidya's called Mayurved, which is a modern form of Ayurveda for you. That's why Mayurved. And yeah, that was really what crafted my way of thinking. I then moved back to India in 2013. So it really broadened my horizons, you know, doing a liberal arts education. I would say most of my friends were non-Indian, right? So Brown doesn't have a very large Indian population. And so although we were a few Indians, like in my year, I think we were 11 Indians out of 1300. A lot of my friends were from different parts of the world. You know, my six best friends today are in six different countries, from London to the US to Mauritius to Turkey, all over the world, right? And all of these people and interactions with them, spending time with them, really broadens your horizon in the way you think about the world. That really changed my life, whether it's my professors or my friends. I think when people ask me what was the best takeaway from Brown, it was the people. Got an opportunity to spend 4 years with the smartest people from around the world. Those experiences were just absolutely amazing. But you know, I'm a super patriotic person. And so for me, I never even thought of staying in the US after I graduated. I said, look, as Indians, there's very few of us who can go outside India and get these amazing experiences to study and all of those kind of things. And so I have a responsibility to come back to India and do something. Now, I'm not one of the people who said I'm going to change the world, etc., all of that. I'm not like that. But I said I have this good fortune of having this amazing education. And so what can I do with this in India? That was the idea, right? And so I came back to India in May. I actually spent June and July in the NDTV newsroom. So Barkha had come to Brown for a radical for 3 months to write her book. And I had the good fortune of working with her as a research assistant on that book. And she told me, you're a student of politics. You're coming back to India and you're going to work in private equity and finance. Oh, great, you know, that's amazing. But at least put your politics education to some use. Do something with it. And so I worked with her for 5-6 weeks on the buck stops here in We the People. That was a really cool experience for me, like really fun. And then I started my job in private equity.
So how did you get the job? Was it like in the US through campus placement, or how did that transition happen from college to corporate world?
Yeah, so basically I always wanted to be in the business side of brands. Like for me, brands is something that was always exciting. Like, why should someone pay 10 times the price of a plain polo just for a small little horse on it and buy a Ralph Lauren polo, right? And so I spent a lot of my time, even my internships in college, working with brands. And then I came back to India for my last December break. And at that time, I was still figuring out what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be in Asia. And my dad took me for dinner with one of his friends, Charles Bonas, who's actually a Brown alum. And he was chatting to me and he was like, you know, Arjun, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be in the business side of brands. And he said, look, one of the best places to do this is Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy Group. They've built the best brands across the world. They own 40 plus brands. And they have a private equity fund called L Capital. And I know one of the partners at L Capital, so I'd love to make an intro to you. And so he introduced me to one of the partners at L Capital, and I followed up with him a few times, introduced me to this partner. He was a partner in France, in the Paris office, and so I followed up with him 6-7 times till finally he got on a call with me. And he said, look, I like you, I like your background, but it's a headache to get an Indian kid a visa to work in France. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to connect you to our Asia office. We've started a fund in Asia called L Capital Asia. It's based out of Singapore. And so I'll connect you there. And so then I sort of followed up a few times with the Asia office as well. Nothing seemed to be happening. And then I went for my spring break and I had a great time. And so I was on the Southwest plane coming back from Miami to Providence. So I was on Wi-Fi checking my email. And I got an email from L Capital Asia saying, hey, by the way, you know, I'm from the HR team and I'd like to have an interview with you. I did a lot of prep for that interview, a lot of prep. Like, I worked really, really hard on that interview. And then eventually they were like, we've already seen your CV. We've spoken to the Paris office. You're a fit. And so we're happy to give you an internship. So there was no discussion, no quizzing me, no questions, nothing. They were like, your questions quizzing is over. We want to take you on and we'll give you a job. You decide now which office you want to be a part of. Do you want to work in the Shanghai office? Do you want to work in the Singapore office? Or do you want to work in the India office? And so I was like 100%, you know, I'll be outside of India for a little bit and get the experience. But then I told my parents, you know, I have these options. They were like, hell no, you're coming back straight to India. If you have the opportunity to come back, please come back to India. So yeah, I got an internship at this fund, L Capital Asia. I did a 3-month internship and I asked them, you know, the only thing I don't mind doing this internship because it's exactly what I want to do. It's the private equity arm of the Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy Group investing in brands. So it fit perfectly for me. But I told them, as long as you commit to me that if I'm good, you'll extend my internship. And then eventually I have the opportunity to get a full-time role. I'm not forcing you. I'm not telling you, you have to give it to me. But if I'm good, give me the opportunity to be full-time. And that they gave me. So I started an internship after an Ivy League degree, which a lot of people thought I was crazy to start an internship. But it's very difficult to break into private equity straight out of college. And so I was very fortunate to be given a project to work on the Indian e-commerce space. Fortunately for me, that was really heating up. So that project became an assignment, became looking at active deals in the space. My 3-month internship became a 6-month internship. And then eventually I got a full-time job.
And around this time, your grandfather also passed, right? Around the time when you joined L Capital.
So I joined L Capital in August. My grandfather passed December 5th, 2013.
Okay. So, but at that stage, you were like you were looking at private equity only as your trajectory and career path.
Yeah, so that has an interesting story, right, Akshay? I was very focused on private equity. I was having a great time in my job. We were investors in Fab India, PVR, and a company called Genesis Luxury, which brought Bottega Veneta, Jimmy Choo, Paul Smith, Canali, Michael Kors, Tumi, all of these brands to India. So I got to work on those as portfolio companies, and I worked one deal actively. So the fund has invested in this company called Batil. It's a luxury dates brand out of the UAE and Saudi Arabia. Yeah, that was the only deal I actively worked on to close. But working with the portfolio companies as well, at least Fab India and PVR, entrepreneurs I have huge respect for, built iconic brands in India. And so that was an amazing experience. But I'll tell you, Akshay, the more interesting part of this was, in private equity, you meet a lot of people and assess a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so in 3 years, I met 150 entrepreneurs in the B2C space across automobiles, lifestyle, fashion, retail, luxury, food and beverage, restaurants, footwear, e-commerce. And that was really the big sort of exposure for me as a 21, 22, 23-year-old kid. And eventually when I left, I was 24 and a half years old. From the age of 21 and a half to the age of 24 and a half, you meet the best minds in retail, in B2C, in consumer-facing brands, invaluable experience. Like, I mean, I would not trade that experience for anything else. And so that really gave me a lot of exposure into meeting some of the best minds in the ecosystem. And, actually, Akshay, basically my dada passed, right, in December 2013. So we thought we'll shut the clinic. Like, none of us wanted to take it forward. And then we literally had his patients coming and saying, you can't shut this. Like, we need this medicine, you know. So we kept the clinic on as a dispensary from December 2013 onwards. Kept three people, including his nurse, in the dispensary. And we kept the factory open with a few people, like 5-6 people. Just making the bare minimum amount of medicine. And people who came with my dada's prescription, basically, they were given medicine. And so we just kept it on autopilot types running. Then basically 2.5 years into private equity, I realized that I want to be an entrepreneur as well. Like, the finance side doesn't stimulate me. The brand creation side stimulates me. So I started thinking of ideas. And obviously, when you want to be an entrepreneur, you try to think of everything but what your family has. Although my dad like seeded the idea a couple of times saying, hey, you know, we have this Ayurveda legacy. You had promised your dad you'll do something with it. I was like, no. That's the last thing I want to do. I was assessing opportunities, ideas, all of this stuff. And then I went to my dad's 50th birthday. His team had organized a celebration for him. And they asked me to give a speech. And so I gave a speech on my dad and how he sort of affected the way I think and inspired me and all of that. And a few folks came to me and said, you know, inspiring speech, great stuff. And my dada's team, or whatever was left of my dada's team, was also at this event. And so my dada's nurse of 17 years came to me with a tear in her eye and she said, you're talking about your father's legacy. But if you guys don't do something very soon, everything that your grandfather left behind is going to die. And that was the switch for me. That made me remember that promise I had made to my dada, the opportunity. I looked at the macro construct, Ministry of Ayush created, Patanjali revolution happening, Ayurveda going through a renaissance. And I saw a big opportunity then to create an Ayurvedic products brand that appeals to modern consumers. And that's what we do today. But that moment was the aha moment of the switch where I said, oh, I have to do this now and have to give it a shot. It's my family legacy. Worst case, the worst that can happen is eventually, you know, I won't be successful, but I gave it a shot. I gave it a shot to take my dad's legacy forward. And so that's when I said, I'm going to quit my job and I'm going to take forward this legacy.
When was this? Like which month?
This was April 2016, of my 3 months notice at L Capital. And then July 2016, basically, I soft launched Dr. Vaidya's. And October 2016, we officially launched the brand.
So how did you launch so fast? I mean, it typically takes like, you know, at least a year for a product company to launch its first few products because you have to work on the formulation, the packaging and the manufacturing and all of that. So how did you launch it so soon?
So Akshay, we had a big head start actually compared to other brands because we own 100+ proprietary Ayurvedic formulations and so formulation part or developing the product part wasn't the challenge for us. Also, we have a head start because every 5 years, my dad and my dad try to do something with this. So we already have multiple plans, multiple ideas, how we'd look at things, etc., all of that in place. So it was not a completely new to the world conversation. So basically from April, I started thinking of it, spending time with my dad, thinking about his ideas, how he had looked at it. And then we worked on the packaging. And actually, my father is a designer, right? He's in the jewelry and watch space. So with a cool friend of mine, he, Rohan, they actually designed the packaging, them like internally, you know. So for us, it was just about getting a website up and choosing which products to start with. We had a big head start in getting the brand off the ground.
Okay. So which products did you start with?
Yeah, so I started with just two products. I started with a product called HerboFit. HerboFit is the goodness of Chyawanprash in a capsule. Although Chyawanprash is great, it's bitter, sticky, and inconvenient. It's a great immunity and energy booster, but format of Chyawanprash sucks. And so my dad had taken the 21 actives of Chyawanprash and developed a formulation called HerboFit, which is a super concentrated extract of Chyawanprash in a capsule form. So I thought that was a topical, modern, new age product. A daily, one-a-day Ayurvedic multivitamin. So we launched HerboFit, and we launched a really cool product called Live It Up. We envisioned our long-term liver protector. And this was a very interesting story. I told my dad, look, Dad, Dada sold diabetes, arthritis, and asthma. I'm not at 24 going to be selling diabetes, arthritis, and asthma, and I'm not a doctor. I don't have Dada with me anymore. So I need to do something cool. And he was like, you know, when we were young, Dada used to give us this liver protector and make us have it before we drink and say it was very good on hangover, right? And so that conversation led me into digging up into my Dada's writings. And surreal experience, I was digging up into my Dada's writings about this product, and I found him right about the hangover and the action of the product on a hangover. And then it was just about me literally giving out this product to people, friends and family at parties. People looked at me really shadily. I remember a friend's engagement party where her mom came to me and said, what are you doing? Like, what are these pills you're giving out to people? Today, the hangover ecosystem in India is very developed. A lot of brands have come into the space. But at that time, it was very new, right? There were very few products. Tried it on like 1,000+ people and found out the product works really, really, really well. And so re-envision that product into Live It Up.
What are the regulatory requirements for launching herbal products? Do you need to go through some sort of government testing and approval kind of a thing? Or is it like typical FMCG products, what is that like? Like when you launched these two products, what did you need to do before launching?
Yeah, so good question, actually, Akshay. Basically, we do have a licensing process, right? And so you have to get the formulation approved in the local FDA, which reports to the Ministry of Ayush. But all of our formulations were already approved, right? From the first time. And so I was just re-envisioning packaging and re-envisioning names. And so I would have to get name change and artwork changes. But the formulations themselves were already there. But yeah, if you want to get a completely new formulation, you have to get it approved by the local FDA. And Ayurveda comes under the same regulation that pharma comes under, the Drug and Compliance Act, although we have different schedules that look at what we do. It's the same regulation. And so there is regulation. A lot of people think there's no regulation. There is regulation for Ayurvedic manufacturers in this country, and it's pretty strict.
So 16, how much revenue did you do when you launched these two products?
So, you know, we did a lot of sampling. We did a lot of consumer study. A lot of people wrote to us saying they liked the products, but almost no revenue at all.
How were you selling it in 16, 17? Like, was it... obviously, the clinic acted as a dispensary, but besides that?
Clinic, website, few online platforms, and some stores, retail stores, which wanted to keep, but very, very, very little. And they used to push to a lot of weddings, you know, like a lot of weddings they would put in the hampers and stuff. So largely 16, 17 was about proof of concept, like, are we doing something right at all? We established that we're doing something right, in that there is demand for these products, but we're doing something completely wrong where we can't be a two-product company. Like, two products is not enough if you're trying to sell on a website, etc. And so November 2017, we repackaged 27 more products. And so we were 29 products by November 2017. And that was a conscious decision to say we need to have a portfolio. Then we started our offline game. And this was the biggest failure, right? So between like November 2017 and February 2018, we tried to put our products offline. You know, as a private equity guy, I said, yeah, there are a lot of stores.
And so far, it's all bootstrapped. Or till 2018, it was all bootstrapped?
Completely bootstrapped. Until much later, it was completely bootstrapped, right? And so bootstrapped, tried to do an offline retail launch, hired 20 sales executives, a sales manager, took our products to like 10,000 stores, hired 10 distributors, did a big launch event at Taj Lands End, spent 7 lakh rupees on that launch event, etc. Thought I was on top of the world, distributors buying the product. Then I remember selling like, I think it was like 10 lakhs worth of product to these distributors and have these 22 sales boys. And in fact, I got 9 lakhs worth of product back, returned to me. And I was like, what is going on? I just don't understand this. You know, I have all these sales guys, I'm paying all of them. But then I realized really quickly that offline is much more than just placing a product in the store. I need to put the brand. The brand has to have pull. The consumers have to pick up the product. And if none of that happens, you just can't do it. So we took a very sort of difficult decision at that time to roll back completely because the business model didn't make sense. And I think that's a very, very, very good decision we took. I think a lot of consultation with my dad, and he sort of told me, look, if it doesn't make sense to you as a business model, follow your ego and just roll back. And so we rolled back. We just let go of our entire team over a few months, then find jobs and said, this is not working for us. And at that time, I also got engaged. And my wife, Trisha, who's the CEO of the business, she was at Goldman Sachs in the UK. She moved back to India. And she worked in the early team at Nykaa, like the first 20 people at Nykaa. And she saw the power of online. And she joined the business after we got engaged, right? So at that time, we took a call that we'll be an online first brand. So Akshay, in November 2017, we used to do one order every 3 days on our website. Like rejoice every, like, ek order aa gaya, like it would come in my email. I'm really excited about it. Trisha said, let's focus. And she also took a very, very monumental decision in terms of our business and where we stand today. She said, we're going to focus on our own website. We're going to build drvedyas.com as a channel of sale. And at that time, you know, B2C brands were still early. Like 2017 was still early in sort of making B2C brands. Everyone believed in the marketplace. And they said, yeah, build a big brand on marketplaces. But why would people come and buy from your website? And so we took that call and people thought we were crazy to take that call. And we really worked hard in 2018 to build this model, right? And by November 2018, I remember we celebrated, we cut a cake for 50 orders a day. That was a big milestone for us at 50 orders a day. And we thought, yeah, you know, this is it. Like now our customer acquisition cost in place and we can really scale from here. And from there, we really, really scaled. And so I remember very clearly in November 2018, sitting with Trisha and saying 50 orders a day at a customer acquisition cost that makes unit economic sense, this is totally worth it and we can scale it. And the real game, Akshay, started then, where from November 2018 to November 2019, we scaled our website business 20 times, right? And along the way, we also raised capital. So in June of 2019, we raised capital. We partnered with RP Sanjeev Goenka Group. They invested close to $5 million, $4.6 million with us. But I think that was the real inflection point where we said, it makes sense. Now let's scale it. And today, our website does 3,000 plus orders per day.
And so when you raised capital at that time, how much of your order was through your own website versus from marketplaces? Like what was the split like?
When we raised capital, I think online and 3P, if you take that as 100% of our business, and that's largely 80% of our business even today, or 85% of our business today is through online channels, whether it's our website or platform. We actually started, actually, you won't believe it, at 90% on our website. And we have scaled down now. Not that our website has grown. Third-party marketplaces have grown as a brand has grown. But to now, 60% of our sales through our website still. And that's very unlike most D2C brands. But our focus is still our own website. And so we constantly try to find ways to improve our website, improve customer experience. Tied up with a yoga app called Sarva. And every Dr. Vaidya's customer, when you place your order, gets 90 days free on that app. And so we're constantly trying to find ways to improve the experience of our customers on our website, whether it's content. You know, so like if you go on our website and you spend more than 30 seconds, you'll be given a prompt to join a WhatsApp group. An opt-in WhatsApp group for daily Ayurvedic tips. We send you an Ayurvedic tip every day. Last year, more than 16,500 people have joined these WhatsApp groups. And we don't give them branded content or products. We give them a tip between 7 to 9 p.m. every single day on Ayurveda. On those hours, on health, on yoga asanas that can help you, on foods to eat, on Ayurveda's approach to ailments, etc., all of that. So we're really, really focused on adding value to the customers. But principally, Akshay, why did we focus on our own website? We focused on our own website because a lot of Ayurvedic treatments need time. And if I sell through Amazon, there is no way for me to tell the customer, you bought 1 month of product, but you have to buy it again and again for at least 3 to 6 months. So with our website, we control the experience for the consumers, and that is really important for us.
So how did the fundraise happen? Like, did you already know someone at the Goenka Group, or how was that?
No, so, you know, basically, Akshay, we were raising capital. We were looking to raise capital from 2018 onwards, actually, sort of mid of 2018. So we were talking to a bunch of folks. I come from private equity, so I was talking to a bunch of folks. Like, I remember someone from the group LinkedIn messaged me saying, hey, you know, I've seen your work. We really like what you do, etc. All of that. We'd like to have a chat. And so I had a chat with him. And then we had a bunch of conversations. And eventually, we took a year to sort of iron out the deal. And that's one piece of advice that I give to everyone who's raising capital. Don't rush into it. Do it when both parties feel comfortable, because it's a marriage, right? You're working together. We worked through the deal for a year, and both sides were getting really frustrated, but I think it was good to give it that incubation period to understand each other better and eventually move towards the deal.
What were the kind of things that you were working through? Like, you know, since a lot of our listeners would not understand the world of private equity and how the deal making happens.
So I think from my end, Akshay, I was working through actually establishing a proof of concept, right? We started our conversation in April of 2018. And at that time, really, the business was really, really small. So we were all figuring out what we were doing. So from our end, figuring out, like, what is this business? How is it going to scale? What is the real concept? And I think before that proof of concept, I didn't want to raise capital because I didn't know what I'd be doing. Like, what was my sales? What are my products? What are my key products? In a really small business, you don't know all of this. So from our end, really figuring out what works, what concept works, how to build a plan to really scale, how to hyperscale this business. And all of that takes time because you're still scaling the business. You're still growing the business, you know? So that's what I was working through largely.
Okay. And how big is your team now?
So we're 120 people, Akshay. 40 roughly in the factory. 80 people in the Mumbai team now. We started with, I think when I started the company, we were 9.
So, and these 80 people are in what kind of role? Like, shipping and logistics obviously would be one large part of it. What else do you?
We have operations team. We have a customer relationship management team. We have a strong marketing team. They're largely digital marketing focused folks. We have people for performance marketing because that's a large part of what we do. We have a content team, a marketing team. We have R&D folks in our team. We have a data team as well. Then we have the CXO's office. Folks who work directly with Trisha and me. We have a 3P team, a 3P marketplaces team. So the ones who manage relationships on marketplaces as well. So we have a team for that. Yeah, that's largely the split for the Mumbai team. And from the factory team, we have production managers, QC managers, QA managers, and then a production executive. And that's the way the team is largely structured.
Okay. And so what was like something which you think was like a major mistake you made while scaling up the business?
Akshay, I think a lot of mistakes, and I still have a long, long way to go. I think the biggest mistake that I made was marketing with fear. And so my dad used to keep saying, Arjun, you can't be slightly pregnant. Don't cut your corners being a brand. Do not cut your corners. So instead of saying 10,000 a month over 12 months, spend six times that, spend 60,000. I'm just giving you random numbers, right? Spend 60,000 in 1 month, or spend 40,000 a month for 3 months instead of spending 10,000 a month. Make the messaging clear, make it exciting, engage with your consumers, but don't do this thoda spend kiya, because then eventually you'll spend a lot of money for a very long time period. And that was really a mistake we made initially. But look, I was bootstrapped. I was investing my family's money. I was young and I was very fearful. And so looking back, I keep telling myself, Arjun, don't cut those corners. If it's a 1,000 rupees extra, but you know you're getting the right value, do it. That was the learning. Big learning. And the other learning is, Akshay, basically grit and resilience is really important. Don't get affected by what people keep telling you, right? And so we run an Ayurvedic products business which fulfills orders to now 15,000 plus pin codes in this country, 84% of which are outside the top 10 cities. I had a lot of investors tell me, Arjun, I don't like your packaging. It doesn't appeal to me. And I tried to keep convincing them that this is not for you. Like my friends and family sometimes say, ye mujhe achha nahi laga. Like, I didn't like this packaging, you know. But our goal is not just for our friends and family. We're building a scalable business for the rest of this country as well. That's really how we need to think of the business. And so initially I'd get very perturbed and very stressed and very sort of taken aback and affected by what people told me, you know, people I know. But then eventually I learned that it's more than just building a business for you.
And so what do you think is like a five-year plan for Dr. Vaidya's in your mind?
Akshay, actually, I get really scared to do these five-year plans and long-term visions and stuff like that. I remember from my first business plan to what I'm doing today, things have changed. But if I I tell you what my goal is, right? I think there are two goals, large goals. We are leveraging the power of Ayurveda using the power of digital to engage with modern consumers. We have been the first brand in the world to launch Chyawanprash in a toffee format to envision Ayurveda to appeal to modern consumers. And so I want to hyperscale this to be able to reach the most remote parts of this country to give consultations on video call, on WhatsApp, on Facebook to consumers sitting in Jammu, Trichy, and Anantnag. You know, we engage with these consumers even, right? That's the real value of Dr. Vaidya. So can we go even deeper to give the power of Ayurveda to consumers in the most remote parts of this country? Really scale the online part of our business, that's one. And two, if you see, Akshay, each of our products bear this mark proudly Indian. This is because I'm extremely patriotic, but also because if I take you back to what I talked about my experience in college, right? I wanted Indians to take Ayurveda to the world. The next leg of growth for Dr. Vaidya's will be to take Ayurveda to the world and take mark of proudly Indian to supermarkets and online platforms across this world. And so 5 years, if we can be in 50 countries, that will be a huge achievement for us.
And what do you think are the levers to growth? You know, so for example, more capital would help you grow faster, or, you know, what do you think are the levers to growth for your business?
So Akshay, I think I've spoken to a bunch of folks across the consumer ecosystem, and capital is great, but it's a means to an end. I think the real lever to growth and the seventh and most important philosophy at Dr. Vaidya's is customer is our reason for being. As much as you do whatever you do, right? And Rohan Mirchandani from Epigamia told me this. He said that the moment of truth for you is when the customer takes out rupees from their wallet and buys your product for a second time. And constantly being in touch with your customers, engaging with your customers and seeing what they want. Don't build products for yourself. Build products for what are needs and wants of your consumers. That is the biggest lever to growth. So Akshay, I do customer service for 3 hours a week myself. And Trisha, we want to see what the customers are saying. I have launched one of my most successful products, Herbo Build, which is a natural muscle gain supplement from customer feedback. We had a great product called Weight Gain Pack, which was doing very well on our website. But a lot of the queries said, I don't want it just for weight gain. I want it for muscle gain. I want a natural equivalent or a natural product with no side effects. And so in July 2019, we launched this product. And I'll tell you today, Akshay, it's one of my top three products in the brand. And we had the formulation, but the customers told us we want it. And so that is to me the biggest lever to growth. What does the customer need and are you there to fulfill that need? Like people ask me, what's the best advice you can give to entrepreneurs? And I don't give all this complicated airy-fairy advice. I say the reality is the journey is really tough, roller coaster. It's going to be a lot of emotion up and down. Two things I say. One, have a support system. That's important. The second thing I say is thick skin, grit and resilience. People are going to tell you your crap every single day. Like I remember when I started this business, a lot of people came to me and said, you're an idiot. Like you're going to burn all your family's wealth because you're going to try FMCG stuff. It's going to be an absolute disaster. Yeah, it's going to happen. I believe, you know, and my team believes in it and they're going to do it. I think that's like, for me, what's most important. People say, have grit and resilience and just go. You're going to fight a battle and just hear no, right? 3.5 years in, if someone says yes to me after the first conversation, I think that there's something wrong in what they've told me. There's no way that they're going to accept without me explaining. So I think that's real world stuff, you know. And still, you know, Akshay, although we are like 120 people in our org, still a very lean infrastructure in terms of senior management and in terms of the work, etc. So everyone's doing two people's work. And still very clued into the micro. Although some people think that that's really, really bad and you shouldn't be clued in the micro and stuff. And I think there's a balance and I think we're skewing to the micro side. I think it's also really important to not just have a macro construct. Like if you don't know what's happening on the ground, you're going to lose sight of your business completely.
Which is why you do those 3-hour customer calls.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And every bill at Dr. Vaidya still, I look at it. And every banner that goes on our website, I still have a look at it. And every word of copy written on every single product of Dr. Vaidya's is still written or edited by me. And I think that's not going to change.
How is it like working with, having your business partner and life partner as the same person?
So I think there's only two ways that it can go, really well or really badly. And for us, it's really well. Look, there are times when we're watching a TV show, like last night, for example, at 11:30 p.m. I was like, hey, I'm sorry, I got to pause this. I just got to close this deal. I need your advice. Please tell me if we're going to close it. We have to close it. We are announcing this collab for Yoga Day, and my team has been messaging me that Trisha has to do this video. So at 12:30 at night, I take out the yoga mat. I'm like, you have to shoot this video right now. That stuff continues to happen, which is frustrating. For her, she likes to switch off. I think dad never switches off, so I don't switch off. And that's really bad. There are moments when it's frustrating. But otherwise, it's great. Yeah. You know, we have our work demarcated. Like anything that business development, strategy, or sales, or production is me. Anything that's operations, customer service, or tech is her.
And how is the new normal going to be for Dr. Vaidya? Like, is this like a, you know, like Paytm had the demonetization moment. So is this going to be like that for Dr. Vaidya?
Yeah, I think it is. I think there's a lot of opportunity and adversity for us. Immunity and hygiene is something consumers really, really care about in this time. Ayurveda has seen a crazy upsurge in demand because of the government support. And so, yes, I think this is a huge opportunity for us.
Are you seeing that in numbers? Like, are you seeing more orders happening?
Yeah, we are seeing more orders happening. I think operationally, we're facing a lot of challenges from supply chain, from logistics, from time it takes in order to reach. But consumer interest towards Ayurveda has increased multifold.
Beyond Campus is a production of ThePodium.in powered by Career Launcher. If you like this show, then we are sure that you will love our other shows on subjects like entrepreneurship, marketing, books, and drama. Check out ThePodium.in for a complete list of all our shows.